Things Were Bad special report. Markets plunge as things were bad on the world stock markets with massive losses in Asia, the Middle East, and Europe. And then at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time, the opening bell on Wall Street.
Stock prices fell so quickly in the first few minutes of the day on Wall Street that they halted trading for 15 minutes. The S&P 500 cratered 7%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped more than 1,800 points, a loss of 7.2% in value.
Steve Kastenbaum in New York. The cause, an escalating oil price war between Russia and Saudi Arabia, pushing the price of crude down 20%. That plus worries about the economic impact of the coronavirus was, as Allison Kosick tells us, just too much.
I think at this point I've never seen this much anxiety on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, I'd say since the opening after 9/11, after the floor was closed.
The Dow and the S&P are now off about 6.3%, the NASDAQ down 5.5%. I'm Michael Toscano. The Grand Princess cruise ship is being allowed to dock at Oakland, California today, but only to funnel a few thousand passengers right into quarantine, including the 21 people known to be carrying the coronavirus infection. More from Jim Roop.
A few days it will take, says Governor Gavin Newsom, to first get the infected passengers off the ship and to medical care. Then the 962 negative tested Californians will be taken to either Travis Air Force Base in Northern California or Naval Air Station Miramar in SoCal. After that, Americans who tested negative for the virus from other states will be taken to bases either in Texas or Georgia for quarantine. And finally, foreign passengers will be sent to their countries on chartered flights.
Governor Newsom says nobody from the ship will be out in public for at least 14 days. Some of Virginia's scores of Confederate monuments could soon be removed under legislation state lawmakers have approved. The Democratic legislature passed measures to undo an existing state law that protects the monuments and to let local governments decide what to do with them. I'm Michael Toscano.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Hey. Cyber criminals stole the W-2 forms from my friend's company.
Yeah, scammers impersonate CEOs in email and also launch attacks from compromised accounts.
What if they target us?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda Total Email Protection.
So we're secured?
Yes. Barracuda protects businesses of all sizes with artificial intelligence that blocks spear phishing, account takeover attempts, and business email compromise.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
It's tax time. That means H&R Block offices are open early, late, by appointment, and on weekends. You can even walk in and drop off your forms.
Can I run in?
Sure. Just be safe. There's a lot of furniture. Convenient hours, convenient location. Just another way it's better with Block.
At participating locations only. Always may vary by location.
This is Janet Rosenow from your locally owned H&R Block offices in the Yuma area, where you always know the price before you begin. Come in today.
Mark your calendar, March 14th, 12 p.m. to 6. You need to be at Fisher's Landing Resort for the annual rib cook-off. Winner of the contest gets $1,000 and bragging rights. You get to taste the best ribs and sides in the county, all with live music, kids zone, and vendors. Rib sampling's only $10. Proceeds benefit Amberley's Place. See you at Fisher's Landing Saturday, March 14th. Bring the family and your appetite.
Weather is brought to you by Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, serving Arizona for over 20 years.
News, talk, sports, and up-to-date weather from 560 KBLU.
75, clouds today, 60 overnight tonight, southeast wind at 10. Rain in the forecast on Tuesday. Right now, a 70% chance of rain tomorrow. 67 the high, 58 the low. Morning showers on Wednesday with a high of 75.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Russ Clark here with big news about Blue Diamond Homes. Amazing manufactured home clearance sale at Rancho Rialto in the beautiful Yuma foothills. Here's my friend, Diamond Dan from Blue Diamond Homes, to tell you more.
This is Dan Esch with Blue Diamond Home and RV, famously known as Diamond Dan. We are now selling brand new double wides in Rancho Rialto Park. That's on 12E and South Frontage Road. It's one of the premier parks in Yuma. Probably one of the greatest opportunities that you'll have to buy a new double wide. We're selling them just virtually at dead cost. You get a year's free rent when you buy a double wide. Besides that, Blue Diamond will take your trade, and you can see the houses right now in Rancho Rialto, all set up, all ready to go.
Amazing savings from Blue Diamond Homes today at Rancho Rialto. Call Diamond Dan at 580-1414. Better yet, stop by Rancho Rialto on 12th Street East in the beautiful Yuma foothills.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the Decent Garner Law Firm, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hansen.
Good morning, Yuma. Welcome back to another episode of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm your host, Attorney Adam Hansen. I'm in the studio today with the one and only Mr. Russ Clark.
Good morning.
I love it. Brought in the music just for that.
Yeah.
I see. Not for me, but for you. You put on the music.
Absolutely.
And then we've got the esteemed Mr. Cody Beeson as well in the studio today on the laptop, making sure that we don't say anything. Politically incorrect?
Fake news. I
can't do anything about what we say, but I can at least bring up facts and figures.
Hey. The facts are what I say they are, okay? And how I interpret them.
There you go.
Yeah, typical attorney, right? But today what we're going to talk about, this came up a couple weeks ago where I met with an individual who came into my office because she recently had her husband pass away. And they acquired their property, their house, back in like the 70s. And lo and behold, now that all of her kids have left the nest, they want to sell the house, which isn't uncommon. It was a lot of house for her. Her husband had passed away, and she wants to be closer to her kids now. And so the reason she came to my office was because she was referred to us by a title company. Lo and behold, when she listed her property for sale and a buyer came to buy that property, when they were going through the transaction, what they found when they were doing the title search was, wait a minute, when you took title to that property, when you bought that with your husband, you bought that not as joint tenants with right of survivorship, but rather as tenants in common. What that means is that both husband and wife had a 50% interest in that house. And that became a real issue because now that husband has passed away, he can't sign the deed.
Right.
Physically, he can't sign that deed over to this buyer that they had all ready to go, and wife was really in a pickle. And now the transaction fell through because that buyer said, well, I'm not going to sit here and wait around. You know, the interest rates are too good right now to sit and wait for that house. I'll find another house because the inventory is low. I got to take what I can get. And so she came to my office because the title company said, you got to get this taken care of. It's sad to say, but this happens quite often, especially when you've bought property back in the 70s or the early 80s, the late 80s. What was happening back then, I don't know why, but as I look at titles, it's very common to see titles, even with husband and wife, when you buy a property or you buy a house together, they weren't put in joint tenancy with right of survivorship, and that becomes a real issue when one of those spouses dies. You would think that when one of the spouses dies, everything just automatically would go to the other spouse, and that's the common misconception. It might, but it might not as well. Nowadays, we live in an era where I think the title companies are more prone to encourage people to do joint tenancy with rights of survivorship so that when a husband and wife come into that office and they're buying a house together, they do the paperwork appropriately where the deed will then be created such that if one of the spouses passes away, the other one has the power to do what they want with that property because the survivor wins. When you talk about joint tenancy with rights or survivorship, or even community property with rights or survivorship, it's essentially the same thing.
But how do you clean this one up now that it's already done and it's already a problem? Is that a long process?
That is a great question, Russ. Man, that's why you're here. You're right on top of it. But it's going to take some sort of a probate matter in order to get that husband's interest transferred over to the surviving wife. We've got to go ask the court for help, and that's what we call probate. Probate is the act of taking a dead person's stuff and transferring it from their name, their titled name, over to the beneficiary's name. In this particular case, when under Arizona law, this person died without a will in place, and so Arizona law says, well, if you have joint children together with your spouse and the spouse is alive, they're your first inheritor. They're your first beneficiary. That's the intestate laws. We've got a caller on the line.
We do. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Life, Death, and Law. Go for it.
Yep. Thank you. I've been wanting to call you guys every Monday for the past 3 months or so. Anyway, when we bought this house 25 years ago, my wife was having some tax problems with her ex-husband at the time. We put the house in my name only. The house has been paid off for 10 years or more. How do I go about putting her and my oldest son on it? What are my steps? I'll hang up and listen on the air.
Yeah, very good question. We do this all the time. If you want to set an appointment with my office, just call my office. It's 928-783-4575, and we can look at it together. What we'll do is we'll do a quick title search, and I can show you through the title history what we can do. Typically, what it will entail is just creating a warranty deed that I can draft up that will transfer that interest from just yourself over to both you and her and son, if that's the way that you end up wanting it. The reality is you own it all, and so if you were to pass away, she's going to have to do something with that particular property. I imagine that once you... It just depends, really. That's why I'm saying come to my office. We can do the title search and see what's actually happened, what's recorded on the county records, because if at the time of that purchase, even putting it in your name, even if you were married at the time to her, it might cause an issue because we're in a community property state. So acquiring a piece of property while you're married, even if you do it just in your name, doesn't automatically abscond yourself from giving interest to your spouse. Let me say that again. If you acquire property in Arizona and you're married at the time and you just put that title in your name thinking, well, she's got issues with her ex, I'm just going to put it in my name to protect myself and to protect us, really, that doesn't really work unless she signs something saying, I don't want anything to do with this property. I am disclaiming any rights that I have in this property. And that's what we call a disclaimer deed. Unless she did that at the time that you bought the property, then she still has an interest. She has a 50% interest because we're in a community property state.
Right.
That's why I said, come into my office.
Even
and
if
take
you're
a
not
look.
Living together at the time, if you're married,
mm-hmm.
anything you do, they get half of.
I've had cases to that effect where these two individuals, they just never went through a legal divorce, and they've been separated for years, hated each other. The kids don't get along with one of the spouses or whatever, and eventually that spouse dies, and we still have to deal with it because they bought it during their marriage. It's community property,
right.
And now we have to deal with it. And it doesn't matter if they hated their guts or they intended to get a divorce. Unless there was a divorce decree, then it's like it never happened. And therefore, we've got to deal with that issue.
What if it's put in a trust?
Very good. So oftentimes, and I'm glad you brought that up, Cody, our forte is putting things in trust or building trust for our clients. And the reason we do that is because it makes things so much easier when a person becomes not only dead, not only dying, but incapacity as well. And that was an issue that I haven't really touched on yet, but we'll touch on that when we come back. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend the products
and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Nobody's gonna love this store.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Sound familiar? Of course it does. Lyrics made famous by Lennon and McCartney. Have you ever experienced sensory deprivation floating? Well, picture yourself in a boat on a river. Sensory deprivation floating is finally available to you in the Yuma foothills at the all-new Herbs to Oils in the Fortuna Palms Plaza. Sensory deprivation floating can relieve stress and tension, may ease joint pain, and if you're willing, free your mind. There's only one place to experience sensory deprivation floating in southwestern Arizona. Herbs to Oils in the Fortuna Palms Plaza. Herbs to Oils is all about holistic health with all natural herbs, oils, and supplements, therapeutic massage, pure drinking water, and Yuma's only sensory deprivation floating in the Yuma foothills in the new Fortuna Palms Plaza. Call 928-955-0041. Online at herbs2oilsyumaaz.com.
We'll get you the information you need every day, Monday through Friday, with the Border Reports. That's the latest information on the wait times of the ports of entry, the border crossing wait times and your updates, as well as the road reports in the afternoon with traffic restrictions and road closures due to road construction and repairs. The Border Reports in the morning, the Road Reports in the afternoon, brought to you by RV World, serving Yuma since 1966. RV World is located on Gila Ridge Road, exit Interstate 8 and Araby Road, then west on Gila Ridge, about a quarter mile. RV World.
Dust off the lawn chairs, grab the family, and get ready for some delicious ribs. March 14th, 12 p.m., Fisher's Landing hosts their annual rib cook-off, benefiting Ambley's Place, where the winner of best ribs wins $1,000. Think you have the best ribs? Prove it. $175 gives you a chance to win some moolah. Rib sampling tickets, $10. Fun for the whole family, with live music, vendors, and kids zone. More info, contact Fisher's Landing Events at gmail.com. Together we can make a difference. Together we can prevent abuse.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the Deason Garner Law Firm.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen, and I'm learning how to talk English today. We're in the studio with the one and only Mr. Russ Clark, and then we've got Cody on the laptop trying to figure out what day of the week it is. It's Monday. And we were talking right before the break about title issues that happen often between spouses, and I made mention of an actual case that that's not the first time that's happened, the case that I talked about where a spouse comes in because they tried to sell their house, their spouse had died, they tried to sell their house, they got their house back in the 70s, 80s, 60s, and anytime somebody's on my calendar and I see that coming in, and what we're going to talk about, I already know if they've acquired that property back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, we're going to have title issues that we're going to have to deal with because of the death of that first spouse. And the reason why is because back then, it wasn't very common. I don't know why, but it wasn't very common to use the magic words with rights or survivorship. And Arizona law requires that one little phrase. There is no getting around that. You can't just say, oh, husband and wife, and that's good enough. If the title says husband and wife and ends there without the phrase, with rights or survivorship, it has to have those magic words, then we're going to probate. That's all there is to it. Basically, what's happened is you've created a tenancy in common interest in both of those spouses. One would have 50% interest, and the other one would have 50% interest, and so when one of them dies, we're going to have a problem. We've got to clean up that title, and that's happened more than once. I gave an example of just a few weeks ago when it happened, but that happens probably, I would say, I deal with that issue probably 10 to 15 times a year. Because what will happen is that person, that surviving spouse, will go to sell their property. And when they've got that buyer and they're about to close out escrow, Now title company is saying, whoa, there's a problem here. You don't have the power to transfer your deceased spouse's interest because there's no words that say with rights of survivorship on that deed. And that's when they refer him to my office, and we get involved to help them clean up that title. Russ asked a great question last segment that a lot of people probably had as they were listening. Well, why is that? What do you have to do to clean it up, Adam? Well, first of all, call my office, 928-783-4575. Thanks, Cody. That's why you're here. And we can sit down and look at that title because it's not that easy. It's not a one-size-fits-all answer. But generally what we'll do is we'll be able to get that interest from the deceased spouse transferred over to the surviving spouse so that he or she will now be able to sign the deed over to the buyer. But oftentimes buyers get spooked and they'll drop the deal because they don't want to go through it. They feel like, oh man, this is a mess. I don't want to deal with it. When in actuality, we can take care of it and relatively quickly as well in most cases. That's why it really pays to have a good realtor on your side. We're realtors as well, and that's why a lot of people will come to our office is because we can work through these title issues all in one fell swoop. Not only can we market your property just like a normal realtor does, we don't charge anything extra for that just because we're attorneys. It's the same as going through another realtor except for our expertise in real estate law and our ability to coach our clients through issues and contracts and things. And so it's a real advantage for our clients to not only take us on for marketing their property as a realtor, but also to watch for those title issues that will inevitably arise. And oftentimes, I've found, even through the basic transactions, there's things that are missed sometimes at the title company. And they're doing their best, but you know they're cranking through these title transactions, and there might be something that just gets dropped or missed, and that's okay. We can fix those things if you're paying attention. And that's what we do as realtors, is we pay attention to the contracts, to the purchase contracts, to the escrow instructions, and we're making sure that all of that is matching, so that our clients are taken care of from the beginning to the end. And that's our goal, not only with the legal practice, but with the real estate practice as well. So getting back to these issues and that caller that called, he just to remind you, what he asked was his current wife was having issues with her ex-husband at the time when they acquired a house. And so they decided, well, let's just put it in husband's name at this time until she gets through these issues with her ex-spouse. And so the question was, well, what's going to happen with that? How does he put that now that those issues have kind of gone away or melted away, how does he now fix that? How does he get his wife back involved into this house ownership? He's paid it off, and that's a big issue. He mentioned that they paid it off a little while ago, so there's no real loan issues to deal with. If there were, it's not that easy. You can put people on title every day. Just because it was in his name doesn't mean that he can't do something about that. He can create a deed, sign that deed, and transfer interest or bring other people onto that property ownership. But if there is a loan involved, the mortgage loan, which there often is, that's just because a person's on the title, on the deed to that property, that doesn't have any effect on that loan document. You can't just put somebody on the title to the deed and expect them to have to pay the mortgage because they're not obligated to pay that mortgage. They weren't the person that mortgage company contracted with and said, well, if you don't pay us back, we're going to take your property. The mortgage company didn't enter into a contract with that particular person. And so what will often happen is once you put a person on title to that house or to that property and you want them to be also responsible for paying the loan along with you, you'll have to refinance that loan. It's going to be a new loan because it's going to have new terms to it. It's not just an automatic thing by putting somebody on the deed of your house or on the deed to your property, hoping that if you became sick or you died that it will go to them, that they also assume your mortgage. It doesn't happen like that. You have to actively do something with the mortgage company, and that means refinancing. You have to refinance the loan, and the mortgage company is not going to be really excited about that most of the time. They don't, unless you have good credit, I imagine they don't really care. But most of the time, they're going to ask a lot of questions and wonder what's going on here. If you do transfer that property over to somebody other than who the mortgage company intended for it to go to, then you've got another issue as well. Most mortgages, if you look in the fine print, will have something called an acceleration clause. An acceleration clause is just a fancy word for a due on sale provision. which means that if you transfer ownership from yourself to anybody else, let's say it's an LLC or it's a person, that mortgage company has the right to call in due the remainder of the loan immediately. Most people don't know that, and they go about transferring their interests to other people, bringing them on as joint tenants and things like that, and they still have these mortgages out there. If the mortgage company finds out about that, they have the right to, most of the time, if you look at that mortgage, they have the right to call in the loan completely due at that moment in time. That acceleration clause would then be accelerating that loan, is what we call that. And so you've got to be careful with things like that, even with putting it into an LLC. Most of these clauses, a lot of them are cookie-cutter language, but they'll say, hey, if you transfer this interest to somebody other than who we contracted with for this mortgage, then we have the right to call in due the entire loan. And if you transfer it to an entity, like an LLC or a partnership or a corporation, and we don't give you an okay on that, then we can also call due your loan. So you've got to be careful in those mortgage documents, looking for that acceleration clause. And it's a cookie-cutter thing that most mortgages, I would say 99% of them will have, unless it's some custom mortgage between a person who just drew it up, you know. But if it's coming from a mortgage company, a big corporate company, it's going to have an acceleration clause, or else they're just doing bad business on their end. So you got to be careful with those types of transfers. You've got a lot of issues going on when you're transferring your interest of your property and its mortgage to other people without getting prior permission from that mortgage company. So you've got a lot of issues coming up when you do those types of things. That's why it's always better just to come and talk to me. Come talk to me, come talk to my partner Sean, sit down with us, and we can walk through the title and the history of that, and we can give you advice as to, okay, this is what your best course of action is. And you can do that by calling our office at 928-783-4575. And so getting back to this community property issue, I mentioned before the break that oftentimes what people will do here in Arizona or California is they'll say, well, I don't want my wife to be responsible for this, or I don't want my husband to be responsible for this loan when I acquire this property, so I'm just going to put it in my name. I actually did this last week, not because of the reason that I'm talking to you about, but I went over to Fisher Dodge, and I was in the market for a truck, and so I called them up, and they treated me really, really well. And when it came time to do the paperwork on that, they asked, well, how do you want title, Adam? And I said, well, I just want it in my name because it's easier for me to get through that. I can just come down to the office, sign the paperwork, and then I'm out. And I don't have to get a babysitter for the kids and bring my wife down. But I did that because of convenience, not because I didn't know what the consequences were. It wasn't that I was thinking, oh, I'm just going to put in my name because if I get in a wreck or if I don't want to pay that car loan, then my wife she's all protected. That's not what I was thinking, because that's not how it works. Because I'm married to my wife, whether that title to that vehicle is in my name and the loan documents are in my name alone, it doesn't matter to her. If I were to die or I was to stop paying that car loan, she's still responsible for it. Even if she didn't authorize it, even if she didn't go down and sign any paperwork.
She's responsible for the debt, even if they repossessed the car.
Yep.
And they
Absolutely.
Could bill her for the losses.
Absolutely, because we're in a community property state. So automatically, she's responsible for that debt. Even if we went through a divorce and we didn't talk about it, in that divorce decree, it didn't say who was responsible for the loan for that truck, she's going to be 50% liable. And in order to get that changed, you have to go through the loan company, the bank. The judge doesn't have – it's very interesting. A lot of people will come and they'll say, well, we're getting a divorce and we've got a mortgage on this house, or we've got this loan on the car. And they think that magically that court order, that divorce decree, is going to magically split that up, or it's going to assign it to one of the spouses who decides to take that loan on, and that's not how it works.
Unless the courts put it on that. And the court can do that in a divorce.
They absolutely can, but that doesn't definitively mean that company has to do it.
Oh.
So oftentimes what will happen is a divorce decree will be issued by the judge, and now you've got this piece of paper that says this goes to this spouse, this goes to this spouse, this spouse is responsible for the debt. But the mortgage company, or the loan company, they have to actually refinance the loan. And sometimes they say, I don't want to do that. We're going to keep them on the hook. So on paper, it might be nice. The divorce decree says one thing, but in practice, a judge can't force that particular company to refinance the loan.
Oh.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, what happens if they don't do it, the ex-spouse dies, and the house, and they say, well, we want you to pay for the house. Does he also get the property?
So they'll still be responsible for, the loan. The property title will be transferred over, because you can do that. Title's different, but you can't change the loan without going to that loan company, that bank, and asking for them to change it. And if they don't change it, then that person's still going to be responsible for paying that loan.
Even if I can't get title to the property?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yep. It's the same with, for example, that truck that I was talking about earlier, where I took it out just in my name, the loan's just in my name, and let's say it gets smashed up and I die, my wife will still have to pay that loan, even though she didn't want anything to do with it, didn't want me to buy it. That's not true, by the way. But if she didn't want it...
Well, what if I'm a gambler and I have bookie debts?
Yep, sorry. I've had that issue, too. Same issue. And in one of these cases, this was a couple of years ago, the wife didn't know anything about it. She really didn't until her husband died. And lo and behold, all these credit cards start coming out of the woodworks that she had no idea about, that he had taken out in his name and used it for gambling and just ran these things up. And she's like, what do I do now?
Unfortunately, come and you've got a call. You're on the air.
Go for it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Got a lot of good information. But when you talk about somebody dying, what is the proper amount of death certificates you should get? Because you're going to need them.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you have? And I'll listen.
Very good. A great question, and this really comes down to budget, because it's $20 a piece for a death certificate nowadays. Oftentimes what will happen is when a person dies and you go through a crematory or a mortuary, they're going to ask you that question, how many do you want? And then they'll go through the process of ordering those through that entire process. Oftentimes what they'll do is they'll at least get two that say for government use only, it's a water-stamped version of the death certificate, and really in practice that only gets used with the Social Security Department. Everything else will not want that one that says for government use only. So you don't really need a lot of those ones. You only need maybe one or two, definitely one. The rest of them should not have that title mark on there. And oftentimes what I encourage people to do is get maybe five to six, depending on how the budget is.
You can't just copy them. They've got to be.
Most times the institutions that will ask for them, they want the original. And what I do in practice is if they want that, and let's say it's Edward Jones and they're not here in town, we've got to mail it to them. It's a packet where spouse is on as a beneficiary, let's say for life insurance or something like that. And they'll send a packet out to fill out by that beneficiary, and he or she fills that out, and they're going to ask for an original death certificate. So when I help my clients through that process, I'll ask for the original death certificate just to put in the mail, but we always will put in a self-addressed prepaid envelope with a letter attached to that original death certificate and say, hey, once you take your copy, stick it back in my envelope and put it in the mail back to me, and you get your original back. So they make their copy, and then we keep the original. Because they're $20 a pop, and here in Yuma County, what will happen is after about 3 weeks, if you don't have sufficient death certificates, you can't get them here in Yuma County anymore. You've got to go to Maricopa County. For some reason, the Department of Health will basically centralize everything to Maricopa County, and you can't get them here locally anymore. And you'll have to go online or physically up to Phoenix to get a death certificate.
You got to take a break.
You got to take a break. Okay, you're cutting me off. We'll be right back after this. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, exclusively offering Hercules tires. A new level of performance and versatility. All weather on and off-road strength and durability. More security, more control, more stability. Longer lasting, outstanding warranty and road hazard protection. Get your Hercules tires at any of the four Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros locations. Or use the Tire Finder online at EdWhiteheadsTirePros.com to choose the perfect tire. Pay online and schedule your installation appointment. Free pickup and drop-off for a hassle-free experience. Guaranteed.
Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters, and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
Good morning, I'm Billy Kang. Your KY Main News with an update. The 310 Yuma Ride Against Cancer kicked off at the Imperial Valley Mall Saturday morning. Cyclists traveled 60 miles to get to Yuma through fields of agriculture, along the All-American Canal, and through the famous sand dunes. Finally, cyclists ended up at the West Wetlands Park in Yuma, where the first-place finishers, followed by the runner-ups, took the pedestals with their medals. The bike ride is hosted by the Imperial Valley Velo Club, and the ride benefits the fight against cancer. And Sunday was the last day of the Art Trail Studio Tour in the foothills. Now in its 14th year, the event showcases art from nearly 40 artists in the area. The event is put on by the Mountain Shadows Artists Association, who all weekend urge people to have fun and get to know artists, featuring different styles of art. All attendees had to do was follow the signs scattered throughout the foothills and travel from studio to studio. I'm Billy Kang, and this has been a KY Main News 11 Morning Update.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the Decent Garner Law Firm.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen. I'm in the studio today with the one and only, the esteemed Mr. Russ Clark, and then I've got Cody on the laptop making sure that our facts are right, supposedly.
Yeah.
And we've been talking a lot today about the way to own property and some of the issues that I often see come up when a person goes to sell their house after the death of a spouse or a death of a loved one that was on title to that particular house or that vacation home or that rental property. And that a couple segments ago, we brought up a trust, a living trust, and how that is a really advantageous way of owning your real estate. And that's really for a few reasons. Number one, if you own property in multiple states, a living trust is the best way to hold that property. Because what will happen is if you become sick or you die and title is in your name, it's really difficult to deal with that property. Let's say that you had a property up in Washington State and that was in your name and then you pass away. And you also have a property here in Arizona that's in your name. And when you die, both of those properties have to be dealt with. And the only way to do that, because it was in your name, is through some sort of a probate action. Well, I hate to tell you this, but Washington has no jurisdiction in the state of Arizona over real estate. And so what will happen is whoever is coming behind to clean up this mess will have to file a probate action in both Washington state and then a separate action down in Arizona to deal with the Arizona property or real estate. Oftentimes, people don't want that to happen. They want to avoid court processes and government issues like that. And so the best way to do that is to take that real estate and transfer it into the name of a living trust. The living trust, what it does is it says, okay, you don't own the property anymore. The trust owns the property. And the trust isn't a person, so it doesn't get sick. It doesn't die. And even when you get sick or you die, because you own property in this trust entity, it's going to have instructions within it who those properties go to or how they're going to be managed after you die. And it's an easy, private way to keep control of those properties. And what's even better is that Washington and Arizona recognize the trust. So you can have an Arizona trust that does it all. It can hold all your real estate in all 50 states and control those properties. And when you die, every state where you have real estate recognizes that trust, and the trustee, the successor trustee that you've named in that particular trust, will have authority in whatever state you have real estate in to manage that particular property. And it makes it really seamless, easy, fast, and it avoids court processes. It's one of the best ways to do things. if you're going to have a rental property, for example, let's just talk about some of the title, the best ways to do titling. If it's a primary residence, you want to have it in the name of a living trust. There's a lot of good tax advantages for that, and not only that, but incapacity and death protections when you have your primary residence in a living trust. Does it give it liability protection? No, it doesn't. But every state has built-in liability protection for your primary residence. So in Arizona, we have a law that says that if it's your primary residence, that it can't be taken out from under you necessarily. If you default on your mortgage, that's a different deal. But if you get sued and there's a judgment levied against you and they record in that county where you have real estate, it's your primary residence, you've got some leeway there. The public policy legislature reason for that is we don't want judgments out there that are going around taking out from under families their primary residence. And so there will be a lien that's attached to that primary residence, but they can't foreclose on it. They can't take it out from under you. We've got some protections in Arizona regarding that. However, if it's a rental property, it doesn't work the same way. Those primary resident protections are not going to extend to some sort of second property that you have, a rental property. And so when it comes to rental properties, or maybe even a vacation home, the best way to hold those are in probably is in a LLC that has an element of a living trust connected to it. Let me explain that a little bit more. An LLC is a hybrid. It can do what you want it to do. It's not as cumbersome as your old corporations. In fact, most people do not create corporations nowadays. There's a very small percentage nationwide that will do a corporation. The reason why is because of they become cumbersome year after year after year. In order to run a corporation, you still have to have your meetings. You have to report back to the state annually. There's a lot that you have to show in order to continue to have that liability protection. Or else, if you get sued and the plaintiff in that suit is coming after you and they say, well, yeah, they have this property in the corporation, but they're really not treating it's just a mom-and-pop thing. They're not really treating it like a corporation. When's the last time you had a board meeting? When's the last time that you filed your annual report to the Arizona Corporation Commission? And this stuff will all come up in that particular lawsuit. And if you can't show that, or if you show it's really you created this entity just for the limited liability protection, but you're really not following through with the formalities, the judge is not going to be excited about that, and they're going to probably what we call pierce the veil, the corporate veil, and it doesn't matter if you have it in a corporation or not. The judge is going to say, no, you're personally liable. Even though this is your rental property, you're personally liable for this lawsuit, and now it opens up a can of worms. Now your primary residence is at stake. Now your personal cars, everything that wasn't in that corporation is now at stake. I tell you that background because LLCs can do the best of both worlds. It can say, well, we are a limited liability company, and I want the corporate liability protection like a corporation, but I don't want to go through the formalities of board meetings and having a board of directors and all that kind of stuff, and I don't want the double taxation that comes with a corporation. So I just want to be a partnership, or I want to be taxed like a sole proprietorship, but I want the limited liability protection. And so I'm just going to do my annual filing with the state of Arizona under my limited liability company just to let them know, hey, nothing's really changed. I'm still the sole member of this thing, and you can rely on that. And that's enough to just keep things going and have that liability protection. It's always good practice to continue to act like a business. You still want to act like a business.
Because they can pierce it based on the way you treat it also.
Absolutely. You still want to treat it like a business, but you're not required to do as many formalities as you would in a corporate setting. So LLCs have become the best way to do business nowadays. And like I said before, not very many people will do a corporation because of the cumbersome of it and the double taxation issues. The ones that usually will do that are these startups, generally over in the California area, primarily in the Bay Area, where you've got a lot of tech companies that are expecting to go big, and they want to be publicly traded on NASDAQ or on the Dow. And so if they've got that anticipation, investors really like that stock certificate. It makes them feel good and fuzzy inside. And so they will create a corporation for that reason alone, so that they can issue stock and that stockholder feels like they've got something tangible, so that when they make it big on the public market, on the Dow or on the NASDAQ, that now they've got this physical share of stock ownership that they can show, and makes them feel good. Save that. Most of us that have a mom-and-pop shop here in Yuma, or you're not expecting to have a lot of investors, over 150 investors or 100 investors, then the best course of action is usually an LLC, because it's less cumbersome and it gives you the best provisions, the best of both worlds. We've got to go to another break. We'll be right back after this. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
If you're interested in a career in media sales, El Dorado Broadcasters has an opportunity for you. A media sales representative designs multimedia market solutions for their clients, including radio advertising, digital solutions, event sponsorships, and more. If you have experience in outside sales and calling on many different accounts, then you already have a great start into the business. Every business has to advertise. If you have media sales experience, that's even better. This is not a commission-only sales position. We'll give you a salary, train you, and you'll make commissions on your very first sale. If you like what you hear, call 928-344-4980. That's 928-344-4980. Successful media sellers make an excellent living, and with hard work, it won't take long for you to get there. Ready to join the world of media sales? Send your resume to hiremenow at edbroadcasters.com. That's hiremenow at edbroadcasters.com. El Dorado Broadcasters is an equal opportunity employer.
VFW Courtside Post 769 reminds us, we know too often our veterans and military spouses have trouble finding jobs. Join the Alliance to help support our transitioning vets and their families. If you're an employer, take advantage of their skills. Hire smart and hire vets. That message was from Quartermaster Richard Lee and Commander Dennis Dole at the VFW Courtside Post 769, where they're committed to making the community a better place. For more information, call 928-927-7697 for VFW Courtside Post 769.
Hi, this is Russ Clark, and I want to tell you about the only air conditioning company I trust to keep me cool. Quick Refrigeration got the call when I was in need of new air conditioners for my home. I value the experience and customer loyalty they have earned from their years in business. They communicate the processes and the capability of the system so I can feel comfortable with the decision. I recommended my friends at Quick Refrigeration to replace your old, inefficient, worn-out AC system with a new, high-efficiency system that will lower your cooling cost as much as 40%. Start the saving today before the summer heat. Don't wait till your system goes down. Call the best in town, Quick Refrigeration, Cooling and Heating, at 782-3691 or visit getcoolquick.com. Quick Refrigeration, keeping Yuma cool since 1955.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the Deason Garner Law Firm.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen, and I'm in the studio today with Russ Clark and with Cody Beeson. And Cody's on the computer. Russ is pushing the buttons and stuff. making this sound as best as we can. And this whole day we've been talking about real estate issues, and I think it really hits home to a lot of people because most of us live in a place. And some of us rent, but a lot of us will buy a property and then we have a mortgage on that property, and a lot of us will buy that property in our names with somebody else. And that's really what I was getting to at the very beginning of this segment, was that we need to be cognizant when taking title to property that is done in the right way. Prior to the break, I was mentioning that if it's a primary residence, the best way to hold that property is in the name of a living trust. It gives the best protection if you were to become incapacitated or you were to die, and even leading up to the issues regarding long-term care. The best way to be prepared for long-term care is really to have a long-term care insurance policy, but in addition to that is to have a living trust that holds your real estate in it. Because when it becomes time to go into a long-term care facility like a nursing home or an assisted living facility, you want to have somebody that you trust in control of those real estate holdings so that they can do what they need to do with them in order to help you qualify for state programs that are available to us if you qualify. And that really comes down to what you have at the time that you need the care, and how much it's worth and things like that. Well, if you have a trust and you have your assets in that trust and you have a successor trustee that's named, that successor trustee is like you for legal purposes, and they can step in your stead and they can move things around in order to help you get qualified for long-term care. And that was a general idea. In most cases, it's going to be very specific to your family, but in general, it's the best way to hold your assets so that that person that you have coming behind you, if you became incapacitated, has the power and authority legally to deal with the assets in a way that can help you get qualified for long-term care. That doesn't mean that they're going to hide assets from the government. The government is going to see it all, and you need to show it and disclose everything, these transactions that you're doing. But what it does do is it allows you to have the flexibility at the time that you need care in order to move those assets away around in the way that the government is okay with and allow you to qualify for long-term care. Getting back to title issues, so your primary residence should be titled in the name of a living trust. That makes it most advantageous for the surviving spouse or the well spouse if one of you becomes incapacitated. Also, it makes it really easy when you pass away to transfer that property over to your beneficiaries. And private too. You don't have to go through a court process. It's really a neat thing. And you can do it in any state, meaning if you have property in another state, you can have it in an Arizona trust, and it's still going to work just fine. In fact, it's going to work even better because it's in an Arizona trust. Arizona is one of the best places to have a living trust. We have very good laws here in Arizona, and a lot of people will flock here to use our laws in the trust realm because of the protections that you can give to your beneficiaries when you pass away. So own your property in your primary residence in a living trust. If you have a vacation home or a rental property or an Airbnb type property, the best way to hold that property would most likely be in an LLC. But that becomes an issue if you have a mortgage on that particular property. For example, if you took out a mortgage to buy a rental property, that mortgage company, going back to what we talked about before, will have in that loan document an acceleration clause. And that acceleration clause is going to include a transfer from yourself, as they contracted with you as the lender, and they're extending you credit, but they didn't do that with this LLC that you want to stick your rental property in. And so if you do that in that loan document, most likely there will be an acceleration clause that says if you transfer it from your name, who we contracted with, who we lent money to an LLC, a separate entity, we're going to call due your entire mortgage, and you have to pay us right now. And so you got to be careful of triggering that clause. Most mortgages will also have at the end of that particular clause, they'll also have an out for you. They'll say, but we can, if you contact us in writing, we can approve it in writing. And if you get that approval ahead of time, there's no problem. Transfer it into the LLC. That's the best way to hold it. If you have a rental property or a vacation home and you don't have a mortgage on it, the best way to do that is to put it in an LLC. The LLC, like I mentioned before, gives you limited liability protection. That allows you to not have to give up your house, your car, your personal stuff if somebody gets hurt on that property. Let's say you have a rental property and you've got renters in there, and they're great renters. You know, that's wonderful. That's a plus. But then something happens. Maybe they trip and fall, or something falls on them, or one of their kids gets sliced by a piece of metal or something on the property, and now they're suing. They want to go after you, and they want to go after everything that they can get because they need to pay for these medical bills. Well, if it's in the name of an LLC, they're going to be limited to what they can actually get from you. They can only get what's inside of that LLC. Well, imagine the scenario where you just had that property in the LLC and maybe a bank account where the rents are coming in. That's all that they can get. They can't get outside of that LLC to your personal home. They can't get to your personal vehicles or to your personal bank accounts because it's all self-contained in that LLC. The risk is all in there. And you're just going to have to be okay with the fact that, hey, they can get that rental property because it's in the name of the LLC, or they can get that bank account that's in the name of the LLC, but they can't get everything else. So it's limiting your liability. That's why we call it a limited liability company. It's limiting the liability. It doesn't completely abscond you from liability, but it will limit the liability. However, you have to keep going through those steps, like I mentioned before, of acting like it's a business, not your personal bank account. You would want a bank account in the name of the LLC, and you want to continue to do the things that an LLC needs to be doing on an annual basis, which is reporting back to the state. Having meetings every once in a while would be really good. You need to have an operating agreement. That's a private agreement between the members or the owners of the LLC as to what happens and when it happens, and you need to follow that operating agreement. If you don't do those things and you just go to the Corporation Commission online, you file an LLC and get it next week, and you don't have any of that background, those background documents and that background process, it's most likely not going to stand up in court to give you protection from liability. Meaning if you get sued because of that issue in your rental and they're coming at you, the judge is going to say, well, let's see your operating agreement. Oh, I don't have one of those. Well, let's see your bank account. Oh, well, we just use our personal account at Wells Fargo. That's not going to look good in that courtroom. And that judge is going to say, well, you just did this as a shell, but you're really operating it as a person, and so you're personally liable, whether you have an LLC or not. And he's going to pierce that corporate veil like we talked about before. So rental properties are best held in an LLC. You can plug that LLC into a living trust, and you have the best of both worlds. You get the limited liability protection from the LLC, and you get the protection for when it comes when incapacity issues arise or when you die. That living trust is a true owner of the LLC, and so it allows for dynastic-type giving, dynastic-type control, and authority, even though you're incapacitated or you pass away. And so primary residences, just to reiterate, they should be in the living trust. If you don't have one of those, come and see me. We can talk about what it entails. Most cases, a living trust is the best way to plan. And it used to be where it was pretty relatively simple to get through a probate process using a will. But the reality is, over time, and the government in its infinite wisdom has complicated the system such that it's very difficult for the average person to get through a probate matter. Well, you can avoid all that if you just create a living trust for the family. And it can be private. It can cause where you don't have to go through a government process like probate, and everything is seamless. You've got this control person or people that you have named within the document, and everything will be smooth if you became incapacitated or you pass away. That's all we've got for today. We encourage you to come back, tune back in next week on Monday for another edition of Life, Death, and the Law. And any other parting words for you, Russ?
I think I got a schooling today. I'm good.
Yeah, it was a lot of information. Blew your mind.
Well, it was, but how we treat it is real important, and I don't know a lot of people understand that. But
yeah.
If you've got a business, treat it like one, or the judge will say it doesn't exist.
Exactly right. And if you have more questions, please come see me. We don't bite. 928-783-4575. And we'll talk to you next week.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was 575, or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBOU, El Dorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU.